The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 2nd of March, 2020. On the podcast today, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talk from the following companies. In fact, we argue about Eddie Stobart Logistics, ESL. We talk about Biotrol, he does, AstraZeneca, and also we disagree on Metro Bank, which he previously covered. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, top 10 versions of both these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk. If you do receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download, and you like the contents, hit the thumbs up icon. And if it gets enough, you know, likes, then it will be featured on that list right there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, who's now turned to Alan the Bear. He's a little bear over the weekend. He's grown he's got all furry, grown his hair, and he's sold everything. I'm out.
I'm out. Yes.
Let me say one thing though, Al. Have you seen those stats that I've just posted on? If you look on Twitter, right?
Yep.
If you sell on the big drop days, when days where we have, you know, bigger than normal drops, right? Yep. You're going to miss out on big days, rising days, because they happen within days or weeks of each other. So you compound your loss because you are selling on a big down day and you don't get the benefit of the big up day that's going to come. We've never ever had the S&P, for example, has never sold off this fast ever. That tells me, if you look at the oversold nature of this, and that tells me we're in for a massive bounce, because it's as fast as the Great Depression. Now, the Great Depression threatened, you know, capitalism, you know, around the world. Industrialized, we've never had a downturn as big as that ever. Now, we've got a virus that's killed 3,000 people out of a planet of 7.7 billion, and everyone's panicking like heck. I understand the global growth is slowing down anyway, because, I mean, we had the yield curve last year. It takes about 18 months, they reckon. There's a lot of people saying now things have changed because of low interest rates and all that stuff and pumping money in. But 18 months towards the back end of this year, or towards 2021, everyone was a bit worried about global growth. This may be the catalyst that goes into the recession. But you've got months yet, Al. Don't rush, don't run for the door crazy headless chicken like everyone else. Oh, we're all going to die! We're all going to die! Sell stocks!
I've just taken the decision to adopt a different approach because, you're
right. Panic approach. I'm glad you're not in charge of men.
Not at all, mate. No. Not at all. It's really quite simple. The strategy I had was just resulting in receiving dividends and not a great deal of growth. And I took the decision that I'm going to adopt a different strategy, and I'm going to invest in selected companies that I believe have an opportunity for recovery. And I will also pick up some gold, even though gold has fallen for the interim. My point was...
Well, gold will fall. Do you know what happened to gold? It's odd, the relationship with gold and the downturn, because people just think it goes up opposite direction. It doesn't. If you look at the financial crisis of gold, right, gold started selling off, and in March 2008, it was around about $1,000. They dropped down to $700 later in the year by October, but as the markets continued to grind lower, gold then started to pick up, and by August 2011, that's like 3 years later pretty much, it hit 1900. So it went from 700 to 1900 in about 3 years, and that's primarily because the governments were pumping money into the system, lowering interest rates. And now we've seen again that governments around the world are going to start saying we're going to start simulating less. So gold may go well, but it did get first of all dragged down by the markets.
Well, the point I'm making here is that
you panicked.
I, No, I haven't panicked at all. I've been thinking about this for really since the start of the year, because we've had this sustained bull run that you and I have spoken about many occasions, and I've been happy to go along with it. But eventually it gets to a point where there has to be a correction. Now coronavirus has been the trigger for a correction at present. Okay, but the thing is. Compared to SARS in 2003, global GDP, China's percentage of global GDP was about 3%, and it wasn't integrated into the global supply chain. Today, China is fully integrated into the global supply chain. You've got factories over there that are going to be closed for months, so there are shortages
Well,
because they will, because people can't.
I've not read that. I've heard they're going back. 90% of factories will be back in work by the end of this month.
Manufacturing plants are at a standstill, and yeah, they may go back at the end of this month. But the fact is that you've had that interruption.
It's a Q1 problem.
Yeah, it's a Q1 problem. You've got the interruption in the supply chain, which has to be made up. Plus, you've got the knock-on effect into airline, tourism, travel. And there's a whole raft of issues, I think, that are going to trigger downgrades from companies declaring earnings.
True.
At the end of the quarter. And the thing is, if those companies are existing on racy price earnings ratios, any disappointment could have a disproportionate effect. And we've seen a big correction already. I fully accept that. But I just think that there's more to come. I think we could see this rumble on for the rest of the year. So on that basis, I've taken the decision to sit on the sidelines for now. And if I miss out on some writers, then so be it. I'm then going to move back into some selected funds, probably in quarter four this year. But in the meantime, I'm just going to look at selected opportunities to buy into companies that I think will push ahead and will grow regardless of the position that the markets are in at the moment, because they're undervalued, because there's been a big correction in the share price, or because there's been a restructuring. So that's going to be my strategy for the next few months, and I will keep you appraised of my progress.
Yeah, but do you know what? I'm about 35% in cash. In fact, about 40% cash I'm now, right now. I was about 60% going back end of last 2019, but I realised if you've got a certain amount of too much cash, you're not going to perform, you're not going to earn a profit, you know? So you've got to put some cash to work. And I think if you've got... if you are invested in largely dividends-paying stocks and you're a long-term holder and you reinvest those dividends, don't just sell everything. You know, I mean, okay, maybe trim a little bit, but the power of compounding over long term from dividend reinvestment is very powerful. You know, and if you just cut your stakes in those companies, you're not building it back up. If you've got cash, you should always have a minimum of 10% cash, I think. I've done this weekend? Two things are really... I've been looking at the stats on bear markets and corrections on the S&P 500. If people don't know, S&P 500 is probably the widest and best, sort of metric for looking at the American markets. American markets are the biggest. What they do, we press follow suit. So, and... it's quite interesting, and I spent ages doing this. I went through all the years from 1928, bring them up for corrections of 10 to 20% or more, so minimum 10%. And on average, a correction of 10% or more will happen once every 636 days, so just under 2 years. So we haven't had a correction since 2018, end of that. So we do one anyway. And so... you've got to look at that, but also you've got to see it as an opportunity, you know. And I think some of the best returns you can earn is off the back of a recession when everything's you get there's very little downside risk then, because everything's played out. When the market starts to turn, there's only one way. That's the up way, and it's buy low, sell high, and that's when you buy. So it's a case of recognizing we are in the sort of the winter years of a bull run. And let's be honest, I've been saying it for years. I've been bearish on and off for like last 3 years, and I think, come on, it's going to happen sooner or later. And I think you may be right. This may be the catalyst that'll pop that balloon.
It's not coronavirus itself. Coronavirus is the trigger. Because of the effect of coronavirus, factories have stopped producing. The supply chain will be interrupted and is being interrupted now. That has a knock-on effect into companies around the world, and we will see that impact on earnings. How severe? I think the thing is, as we know with China, it's very hard to get a really accurate picture of what's going on there because we're seeing lots of reports coming directly from China on social media, and then the government is saying something else. And we're seeing some fairly sort of credible business people in China saying things like, you know, it's an absolute pandemic, and Australia's now declared it as a pandemic. That's as may be. From an economic standpoint, it's the impact it has on the supply chain and the knock-on effect that has to company earnings quarter one. So we're not really going to get the full picture of that until quarter one. But
do you know what? This was looking at.
I think because we've had this sustained run, and it's still not.
Yeah, growth was weak anyway. Growth was weak. Earnings started going down in lots of companies.
Yeah.
And so all you need is this now to really tip them over the edge and to become. I mean, Goldman Sachs has come out and said this will be a negative or zero growth in this quarter, or even negative maybe for China. So that's quite worrying. But do you know what's interesting? If we break out now, we've hit the correction mode, right? But if we break back up now, I've locked these stats together, and I've done a chart of the percentage chance of a drop of 10% more after the previous drop. So there's a certain amount of days after the previous drop when you have it. So if we do come back out of correction territory, right, there's only a 1.89% chance that we'll correct again or drop 10% lower again within 100 days.
Yeah.
Now, that goes up to between 100 and 200 days, there's a 9.43% chance that we'll correct again within this. Yep. I know people sort of panic and sell straight away, but generally, wait for the bounce. And I'm not talking about just a half-day bounce. I'm talking about, you know, this little bounce can bounce from weeks to months, and everything will be hunky-dory. That's the dangerous position then, is when we bounce and everything's the economy's back on track, and yet it isn't. It slows down. Because bear market rallies are more aggressive than bull market rallies. Bull markets go up and they come down a bit and go up and go. But when you start to, because what you got is the majority of people want stocks to go up, you know? The default is for stocks to go up. So when it's like I'm pushing a ball underwater. It's resistance there and it comes back up quickly and then goes back down. You push it down again. So it doesn't want to. It's like pushing someone underwater. They don't want to be drowned. But if you put enough pressure on their head, they will, you know, but they'll struggle and they'll fight against it. And that's what a bear market rally is, you know. It'll really aggressively pop back up and people think, oh, fine, we're back on track. And then
you're absolutely right. But there's no doubt we're going to see some violent swings on the stock market. I mean, already we've seen the FTSE up 180 points at the open. And then now it's come back down and it's up, I think, 80 points or so. So it's going to be up and down. People are buying and selling. There's a lot of volume in the marketplace, a lot of liquidity driving those prices. But I think regardless, the longer picture is, I'm just looking at this picture for the longer term. And I believe that we will get some significant further falls. And possibly at that point, I might then start scaling into some funds. But I am pretty well, apart from, I think, 10% of my holdings are in penny shares. I'm in cash. So I'm going to say that way for the time being.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Marvellous. You know, China says African swine flu fever vaccine effective in lab tests. That's not for, what's this? I don't know, that's not for on this, is it? I don't know. Anyway, let's go on to stocks, Al. What nonsense are you talking about this week?
Okay. Well, I've been looking at this company for the past 3 or 4 days, and this is we spoke a few weeks ago about Expediator, the road haulage company, and this is probably one of the most iconic names in road haulage and logistics, which is Eddie Stobart Limited. Epicode is ESL. Now, about a year ago or less than that, the company was worth sort of in the region of $500 million. Today, it's worth some 45, 50 million.
I see a lot of people saying that. When a share price drops 90%, it doesn't mean the share price is cheap then. There's a reason why it drops. So no, sometimes even if it drops 90%, and let me just say one thing, even if it drops 90%, it can still be overvalued. You know, if you're looking at a company that's riddled with debt and it's not going anywhere, it's making a loss, then it can still go lower. It can be a basket case. It can go bankrupt. Full stop. So when people often compare what it was several months ago to what it is now, it's not relevant. You know, if the fundamentals of the company has changed, you know, it's what it is now. You know, and what is going forward, you know?
You're absolutely right. But I've actually looked at the reasons behind this fall, and I do believe it is oversold. So the reasons why. Firstly, Eddie Stobart basically has a supply chain management organization called iForce, logistics people, Speedy Freight Courier Company, and then the pallet network. Last year, there was an accounting error in the business where they overstated adjusted profits by $2 million. At that point, Wincanton, the road haulage company, were looking to make an acquisition, and in November last year, they pulled out. Martin Reed at Wincanton said that he wanted to buy the business. He wanted more time, but because of the allotted time they had to make the offer and to confirm the offer, they were unable to complete sufficient due diligence and examination of the accounts because an auditor's review was underway following the accounting error. So at that point, Stobart came to an agreement with DBay, and a company called DBay Advisors injected 70 million quid at approximately 32p into the company. The agreement was made, the checks were undertaken, and the company came back to market on the 26th of February last week. The shares fell 90%. They came back at around 6p. They've since risen to, they're currently trading at just under 13p. They also declared interim results where revenues had risen 26% to 420 million. An underlying EBIT loss of 11.6 million versus a profit of 600,000, and there was a 169 million impairment charge, which was declared at the time. So net debt is currently 158 million versus 115 million previously, and the company has said going forward the issues that prompted the accounting error will not materially affect the company going forward, and it expects to record a small EBIT loss for the year. So the money's come in. The cash injection's coming at approximately 32p. The company's continuing to trade. The outlook's good. We've got a company that's turning over, going to be turning over 800-900 million on the year, and it's currently got a market cap of 48 million. And if there's a small EBIT loss on the year, then if the share price stays around where it is now, that's probably a fair reflection. But there's a lot of people saying that, and a lot of analysts are saying that this could go back up to where DBay scaled in at around the 30p mark. So I'm just highlighting it. It's a big company. Wincanton would have bought it possibly if they'd had more time to complete the due diligence. They didn't. But it's just an interesting investment case. And I think there's an opportunity here, you know, unlike something like Thomas Cook, which was clearly gone. This is a company that's very much operating. It's one of the biggest names on the road. It's had an accounting error. It's got over that. And there's an opportunity to invest in this big name at a very low market cap in comparison.
Yeah, but no one ever talks about the debt here. Let's be honest.
Debt of 158 million versus 115 million debt previously on a company that's turning over.
Don't worry about the turnover. I do feel it's almost deja vu. When you came on before with Thomas Cook, I kept saying, listen, look at the debt. Look at the debt always. When you're in a loss-making company, you can't service that debt. You're drowning. So 158 million is valued at 40 million. So what's that? Almost five times its valuation in debt. I said this on the weekend podcast with friends. You imagine being underwater five times your height in water, and someone keep filling up and you can't swim up because you're being held down, and someone keep topping up the water. That's what they're underwater. And I don't understand why. I've seen so many people punting this on Twitter, and I think there's plenty of decent companies out there with no debt, generating cash, right? Why are you going for a company that's almost a basket case going that could easily go the same way? Let's be honest, in this environment where we're at now, we've got problems with global growth, travel problems because of that thing. this could easily, you can wake up tomorrow and I've said this to people with Thomas Cook. What else have we talked about like this? Other companies, you know, Carillion, Debenhams. You could wake up tomorrow and the backers could pull the plug. And I'm thinking, why take the risk? Stocks and shares are risky enough anyway. The whole point of investing in my eyes is trying to manipulate, you know, by research, the odds in your favour. To me, this is almost odds against. Is that, you know, you asked, why are you going? I don't understand why people would go for a company so indebted. Why? You don't have to.
So, but you've got a set of interim results there that shows...
Don't give them revenue because they're making a loss. Doesn't matter revenue.
In the case of the companies we've talked about, you're talking huge losses there. This is an EBITDA loss of 11.6 million. So,
that's a quarter of their valuation. Hang on. With the impairment, that's 190.
On the year, operationally on the year, they expect to make a small EBIT loss with the impairment charge of 169 million. So that goes through the company. The company continues
but
to
why
grow.
Pick a company making a loss anyway? Is it making a loss and they got massive debt? Well, why not go for a company with no debt making a profit?
Well, the point is,
it's almost like saying I'm going to run a marathon. It's hard enough anyway. You run a marathon. What I'm going to do is I'm going to train for a marathon. I'm not going to run it. I'm going to strap one of my legs to my back because I want to make it harder. Investing is hard enough as it is. Why go for indebted companies? I don't understand. There's like all these people punting it. There are new people. I'm scared of, right? There are new people on Twitter who don't know how to invest, and they're following all these people pumping this stock. And I think, do you know what? Out of 2,000 companies listed in the UK, you've probably got 95% of them are in a better situation than this company. Why would you go for this? Just quick money. Well, I don't know. It's insane, I think.
I think you've got to take two factors into account. Yes, there's an EBITDA loss on the year. It's a small EBITDA loss in relation to turnover. Number two, the backers that came in after Wincanton pulled out scaled in at the equivalent to 32p. So they put 70 million into the company at 32p. So that to me says that there's value higher up the chain. The investors clearly saw that, and the company is continuing to function. Turnover grew dramatically from previously. It's up. Revenue's up 26% for 2019 versus 2018. So I think.
But when you're making a loss, it doesn't matter how much you turn over. Like I said, you know, revenue is vanity, isn't it? Profit is sanity.
Absolutely,
and
if there were, if the company had made a substantial loss along with that, it's made an EBITDA loss of 11 million versus a turnover of 421 million. So that is a loss, but it's not a huge loss, you know, compared to the amount of cash this company generates and the amount.
But hang
of
on a second, hang on.
It's got backers that have come in at 32p. So I think those are the factors that you've got to take into account. Yes, that there is debt, but the management team are working to address that. And as brand names go, this is one of the biggest brand names in the UK. So I think
Thomas Cook was the biggest brand name in the world for holidays. Went through.
I'll just say that, yeah, Thomas Cook right now would be an awful investment, wouldn't it? But I'm just saying that I think you've got to weigh up all these factors.
Okay, I'm looking at the balance sheet right now. Okay, people say this company's worth half a billion, whatever, a couple of months ago. Right now, it's worth minus 60 million because that's what total liabilities are. They haven't got that's net liabilities of 60 million. So that's everything in the account. Take your cash in account. Everything you want to account. All their assets, all their liabilities, everything. They are 60 million in the hole. Million. So people are saying this was valid at something 6 months ago. It doesn't matter. They're now 60 million in the hole. Full stop.
So why would investors come in and scale in?
Because they're stupid. They're absolutely insane. Because they haven't a clue. Because they're simple.
Really? okay.
That's why.
And I don't think so. But there we go. Okay.
Well, I don't know. Would you invest in a company that's got 60 million of net liabilities and literally have an accounting problem? I wouldn't. I'd think, do you know what? I'll invest somewhere else. To be honest, fine. There's less painful situations.
But on this podcast, we're just putting investment ideas in front of people. This is a speculative buy opportunity. It's not without risk, as we've highlighted. But I think you've got to balance everything off. And in my opinion, this is worth the punt.
Yeah, you've got to balance off the sane with the insane. And I'm the sane side here, and you're the insane.
Thanks for that, Jess. Okay, right.
Right, what's the next dog, Al?
Okay, well, there's a company that it's an antimicrobial product company called Biotrol, BYOT. So this is got a tiny market cap of circa 18 million at the moment. Shares are trading as high as 4.1p on the year and as low as 1.5p. Currently trading at just on 4p, so it's more or less at the year high. So it has antimicrobial technologies and products, Actizone, which was developed with Manchester University, which is a general cleaning product, Biotrol, which is antimicrobial technology and appears across a number of bathroom cleaners and surface wipes and so on, also used extensively in pet care, and also outperforms bleach when it's in hospitals when it tackles MRSA. There's a lot of data on that you can see on the website. It also has Inverti, which is a skincare application, hand sanitization, which is also if it's used. I mean, I went to London last week, went to a number of meetings, and as you walk into reception, there's a hand sanitizer at the counter, and that sort of caught my attention, and I noticed that it was the Biotrol logo was always on the bottle, so it got me thinking, I've done some research, and this hand sanitization product does kill coronavirus. Sales, so the company announced interims in December. Sales are 2 million, 2.1 million up from 1.1 million previously. Operating loss of half a million versus just under a million previously. That's 0.5 million versus 0.9 million previously. The company's got 2 million cash in the bank. It made an acquisition called MediMark last year, which is integrating well. And the board have said it's on target for sustainable operating profits possibly this year. We have David Trainer as the CEO, Nick Kelly, who's the CFO, and recently John Langner, non-exec, and Nick Hellier both bought shares at an average of 1.79p. So, share price is probably benefiting from the fact that it's recorded that its hand sanitizer kills coronavirus or is suitable for getting rid of coronavirus. But nonetheless, you know, this is a company with a number of products in the antimicrobial arena with still a fairly modest market cap of 18 million. So do your own research, folks, but one to watch.
Marvellous, yes. Are you now sponsored by Afzal? Did he give you the...
No, he didn't actually, no. I've since seen on Twitter that he's a fan of this and so are others. But no, he was just, as I say, he was just walking to that reception point and just seeing that bottle sort of on reception. So as you took the card to get through the gates, you basically had to squirt this stuff onto your hands and that was it. And of course, it dries fairly instantly, doesn't it? But yeah. So when you go and shake hands with the people you're meeting, everyone's clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Okay, so it's that. What else you got there?
Okay, just wanted to touch on AstraZeneca, Evergreen AstraZeneca, fantastic investment, for me over the past few years. Currently trading just over 70 quid a share. They've had a phenomenal year. They announced full year sales growth of 12% recently. That's up to $23.5 billion of turnover. Operating profit of just under $3 billion. That's up from $500 million the previous year. And earnings per share of just over a cent compared to 0.2 cents previously. CEO Pascal Soriot said it's been a fantastic year for the company. It's now become a better balanced business, and he expects 2020 will be another year of progress for the company. And I think when I spoke about it in more detail last time, obviously it's a Cambridge-centric organisation, but it has applications and it's developing drugs and applications for oncology, cardiovascular, respiratory, and a whole range of medical solutions. I remember, I think about 10 years ago, looking at AstraZeneca and looking at Glaxo, and I'd had Glaxo shares for some years, so I decided to try Astra instead. And I think I got into Astra then at about 35, 40 quid a share. Since then, it's just powered north. Glaxo, on the other hand, has stayed still. But it doesn't mean to say it's not a good investment longer term, but certainly Astra is the one that's performed, and by all accounts, looks as though it's going to continue performing.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it, how, I suppose, it's mad when you get these market sell-offs, you know, because even the pharma companies, even ones are looking for, you know, or in that area of looking for antiviral sort of drugs, you know, gets sold a little bit as well. Because, I mean, even AstraZeneca got sold off, which is a bit odd, isn't it? So everything, when everything's getting marked down like that, it's just nuts, isn't it? You realise, hang on a sec, there are companies that will not be affected whatsoever. You know, they're not even touching it. I mean, there are, like, you know, FTSE 250 companies, even smaller, who are domestically based. You know, they do all their for example, they got packaging machines or whatever, so, or anything. You know, you say, well, it's not going to affect them. It's not going to affect them at all. Why are they getting sold off? You realise market makers just marking everything down, aren't they? Because they're so worried about the uncertainty where it's lend, they just mark everything down.
Well, everything's been marked, certainly on the smaller stocks, but obviously, you know, with the larger stocks, it sets, and it's just there's a sell-off. You know, funds are dumping stock to maintain their positions, so it's just you know, it's an expedient manoeuvre at the time. But nonetheless, as you say, the core business is completely unaffected. I mean, Astra is a global business, so, you know, possibly there may be some. I mentioned the supply chain issues at the outset. There may be some there, and clearly that will manifest itself in quarter one earnings. But yeah, certainly, it's an evergreen British company, and one, you know, which is a country we can be very, very proud of. So, yeah.
Do you know my take on the whole thing is yeah, just going back to it all, is it a catalyst year? We've had slowing global growth, and it will take it out. Now, people can get confused about, you know, people are just getting worried about. It's amazing how people get so scared. We're out looking at the figures. They look at things on TV, and they literally. You can see people, the unhinged people on Twitter. I assume most people are quite, you know, are quite well adjusted.
Then you
realise the unhinged start really, you know, pumping out lots of scary tweets and fears, and you think, hang on a sec. I'll go back to this because people. I know the comparison with flu is a bit off, really, but. Flu has a vaccine, right? That's why it doesn't create much worry. Even though, even with a vaccine, it's killing, on average year, 2 people per day in the UK, right? So that's a lot more than we've had with the coronavirus. People keep saying, yes, but it's going to spread faster and faster. It's not. Figures now in China, whether you believe them or not, are now going down. They've really dropped, cases reported. They're really dropping. So if we follow the same kind of model, same kind of trend as that, it'll happen over here. But it's pretty much new over here at the moment. But so people, you realise, the majority of the people will not earn good money in the stock market. They are the market. They will, you know, underperform or perform with it. Yeah. The people who, you know, outperform, the people of Warren Buffett, have been sitting on piles of cash. His cash pile has been going up the last couple of years because he realises that the valuations have been stretched on the S&P, and so he couldn't find any bargains, full stop. So basically, his cash pile has gone up. And now we'll have a couple of sell-offs now, and he's piling back in. And you know, it's not really comfortable to buy when others are selling. That's what he does, and he sells when other people buy. When everyone thinks, "Oh, this is hunky dory," he starts selling then because everyone's in, everyone's bought, and the market can't go a lot higher. It may do on exuberance, but really.
That's the thing. There's your thing that drives the market higher, but as you said, there's no long term value or growth opportunity there because the market is where it is. And I think that's actually where the market was. There's some value there now, but I still think this has got longer to go. So I'm taking the view that I believe we will sort of have further falls after quarter one earnings. So I'm just taking this opportunity now to get out. And I guess we'll see in the longer term. But I'm quite happy with that. I took a while to come to that decision, and I'll let you know how it goes.
I think it's always fine to take a bit more time. And if you're in doubt, you know, get out. I mean, not completely. But if you want, it's like that with stocks and shares, right? It's quite easy to get carried away with the company and just go all in because you're convinced, you've done a bit of research on it, and you're convinced it's the one, right? But you often find, you know, no share price goes straight up or straight down. So if you want a bit more time, you can take a bit more time. It's fine. You don't have to jump in or jump out quickly. But I'll wait to see what happens, because even if you give it another week, you imagine now if literally just the case is just, you know, just drop off completely. You know, let's be honest, there are people who have coronavirus, don't even know it. So in a healthy person, it's so mild, it's a mild form of flu. People just think they have a bit of cold, that's it. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal in itself. Most of the people, like I said, of 90% of people are dying are above the age of 60 with pre conditions, health conditions. So,
well, I think those most at risk are men over 80 years of age.
I think it's 90% over the age of 60. Your probability obviously goes up massively if you have a pre-existing health condition, which you probably will have. Many people above 60 and 80 start to have issues anyway. But I mean, people with serious issues could drop out.
I watched a video clip that dispelled a lot of the rumours around coronavirus last week. You know, it doesn't come from bats. It's basically a development of a virus. 90.
It was created by the Chinese. In a lab. That's what they're saying. I read this thread last night. It was very well done by this guy, and it was too much scientific nonsense and links in it that actually go through it all. But it suggested that. But imagine this. This is a thought, Al. Imagine if it's just a test by the Chinese to anyone. This is just a test run of a virus they're creating to see how effective it is. And they're going, wow, that's quite effective. Man. It's knocked the world economy. This is just a trial run. Because that could happen.
There's also all sorts of things, all sorts of conspiracy theories. But at the end of it, if you're hospitalised as a result of this, you still have a 98% chance of survival. So you know, it really sums up how relatively mild this is, and probably the 2% that will die are going to be men over 80 years of age or elderly and infirm people or people with severe respiratory problems. So I think you've got to sort of have a balanced outlook on all this. But as I said at the start, it's not the coronavirus itself. It's the fact that China's so integrated into the global supply chain, and it's the interruption in supply of drugs, electronics, and a whole raft of applications. Plus, of course, the effect on the oil price, the effect on travel, tourism, and so on. So,
when did you sell the majority of your stocks? It wasn't a measured response. You're a panicking maniac. I bet down the phone your broker, just sell everything quick, we're all going to die. Do you understand? Look at the news, sell it.
No, I have a friend who I invest closely with, and
he's the same. We're gonna sell out.
He's already 50% in cash, and he decided to go down to reduce to 90% cash or to reduce his exposure. So he had 90% cash in his account. And was he also
down the supermarket buying lots of food? Great, Al, sell stocks, buy food.
Put all
your money in food.
As I say, for me, that works right now. You know, and there's cash there. So if opportunities come up, I've got the cash to sort of get in and take advantage of it. So that's it. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Don't forget, you haven't mentioned Metro Bank results.
Oh yeah, Metro Bank results last
week. Dreadful, isn't it?
I was just looking these up for you. So yes, Metro Bank. Dan Frumkin is now chief exec. He's been confirmed as chief exec.
Hardly a big signing, was he?
Well, no, but he wasn't. But also, don't forget they had they brought in Sally. What's her name from Barclays?
Sally, what's her name? Well, she sounds quite good.
Head internal auditor at Barclays, and she's now coming. She's now coming to Metro. Sir Michael Snyder remains the chairman of the bank, and they said the financial performance reflects a challenging year. Balance sheet strength is retained. Strong annual growth in customer accounts, and the bank is still very popular.
Don't worry about awards. I don't care about that.
As you rightly say, and as you said before, they had to borrow money because of the accounting error last year. They borrowed it, and they're paying a hefty coupon back, and that is going to impact on profits. So we have an underlying loss before tax of 11.7 million versus a 15 million profit previously, reflecting balance sheet strengthening actions and debt interest expense. So it's right up there.
A statutory loss of 130 million compared to 40 last year. So they lost 40 last year. They've now tripled that. That's cracking growth. On the downside, 130 million. Now, as I said before, they've said last time they were going to lose money. People kept denying that. No, they're not going to lose that much money. But the only thing going for this bank now is the strength of its balance sheet and its customer book, you know, its loan account. But that strength won't be there forever. As they keep losing money, that'll start going down. It'll start eating away at their, you know, their assets. And that's, so that's going to reduce slowly over time. And so at the moment, the only rescue they've got here is the hope of being taken out. And hope is not a strategy. The business as it is, the business model's knackered.
Well, we had all this rubbish last year with some thick-wristed Merlot drinking city aficionado saying that you know, there was a bidder in the wings, and it could be Antonio Horseria from Lloyds. It could be, and you know, maybe the retail operation will be attractive at the right price, and who knows where that'll be. But the fact is that that there's a team of people there now running the bank that have very much got the ship. You know, sailing back on the straight and narrow again, and the financial issues are sorted. They are still very well capitalised. They have a lot of money behind them, and they're from a strategy standpoint, the community bank, the high street bank model for Metro is working very well.
How is it working well? They're not losing money hand over fist.
Well, it's working
well. Because you've got Doris and all that loving to go into the Eastbourne store. It's nice to have someone to talk to in the store. Thanks, love. We got your 20 quid deposited. It's not helping them.
Yeah. Strong annual growth in customer accounts. You know, that's...
Even they're paying hand over fist for it. It's like cost them lots of money. They're not making any money on those.
Yeah, but
it's a bad business.
But eventually, as they continue to grow accounts, they continue to grow the accounts, that they'll become stronger and they can refinance that debt, or repackage that debt, which is why Sally Clark, the auditor, the former head auditor at Barclays, has come in to perform the role at Metro Bank. So there's a team in place there now that can get the bank sorted, and whether it's sold or whether it continues alone as it is at the moment, who knows? But the fact is that it's still, in my book, an investable proposition.
You said that with Thomas Cook. And,
that's a great thing, Jess. We have this debate, and there's good and bad. And
That's bad. I mean, let's be honest.
It takes two opinions to make a market.
I suggest going for strong cash generative companies. You're suggesting ones are going for just bankrupt, you know, loss making companies. Inno, come on, Al. Come on. You know where it lies, the sense lies. I'll send you a list over of stocks I'm invested in, and you know, you can jump on board with some of those, because they're immune from this pandemic, panicky sort of pandering sort of society. Everything's going, they're all dying. It's not. Yeah, if you look
we're
at
doomed.
The case,
we're doomed.
Yeah, that's what it's like. But I'd take on maybe increase my cash level if I were you people, but I mean, I wouldn't go nuts about it. You know, that's the trouble is, you know, everyone goes nuts, and it just takes the market down. It's like, just
well, that's the thing. Yeah,
stiff up a lip, man. Come on.
Yeah, But we'll start to see the speculation. Well, the speculation will start to manifest or be proven or disproven when quarter one earnings come in, and we can see the impact of the coronavirus. And it may be that there's been a minimal impact, and on the back of that firm data, the share prices and markets will rocket again. So who knows? But until that time, I'm out.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast things will rebound, though. You know, if people pull off something, you know, a holiday, as soon as this, you know, sort of cleared up, they'll just rebook. It's fine, isn't it? You know, so maybe a lot of things will be delayed, I assume. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. As we're the global growth is slowing down anyway, we didn't need this, but it's come. But there we are. Marvellous. Cheers for that, Al. Speak to you next week.
Speak to you next week, mate. Cheers, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Dev Clever Holdings, DEV, down 1.6% to 3p. At four, ULS Technology, up 4.25% to 57.35p. At three, Arix of Bioscience, ARIX, is ticker there, non-mover, 82.5p. At two, Rose Petroleum, non-mover, 0.975p. And number one most followed company, it's Eddie Stobart Logistics, who we talked about, who we argued, we discussed with Alan. I said we, I'm talking about me, of course. I don't know why I said we, to be honest. And the top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Starcom. Final results. Are they up on today? Or up a little bit there. Results there. At four, Jan Gardemind's new corporate presentation and PDIC attendance. No idea what that is. At three, SafeStay. Update on acquisition. At two, Cora Gold. Metallurgical test work program commencement. And number one, most liked RNS, up 11% a day. It's Strategic Minerals and Cobre Access Rollover confirmed update on projects. So obviously people are seeing that as a positive. Hopefully we'll try and get the guys on the podcast soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.